I was familiar with an archaeological discovery that was made by a Greek archaeologist named Dino Politas. And so I wrote an email to the Associates for Biblical Research saying, I know that you know about Dino Politas' discovery of Deir Ain Abita, which is this sanctuary of Holy Lot. And if you think that's next to modern or the ancient city of Zoar, I think you're right. But if you want to go out there and if you're thinking about looking for the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, you need to take a geologist with you. And so I sent that email off to the Associate for Biblical Research. I didn't hear anything. And then a year later, I got an email back. Okay, you can go. why search for the lost cities? Where is the region of the lost cities? Okay, especially Zoar, the surviving lost city. Have the lost cities been found? How about the archaeology and geology of sites? I'll give you some of my ideas about it. And then evidences concerning the cause and timing of the destruction, and then future research and publication. That's something to think about. Okay, well, take a look at this scripture, this provocative scripture, Genesis 13:8. And I'll go through a series of scriptures here that I hope you're familiar with, and then I'll give you my comments on them. Abraham, or Abram, his name wasn't changed yet. Abram said to Lot, let there be no strife, I pray, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we are brethren. Okay, and you know the story. They split, right? Here's what Lot saw. Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Now, let's take a look at a few of the right there. Let's look at that word plain. Very unusual word. It's kirkar, the Hebrew word for plain. But it's a circle, and there's other words used. It's only used in reference to cities of the plain. And it was well watered, and that's a special word, meshek. And it means well irrigated. And it sounds like there were some very interesting things going on there. It was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, what does that region look like now? Not well watered. Okay. Before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. And Zoar is one of the cities of the plain that survives. So here's the land that Lot chose. Abraham dwelt in the land of Canaan, up there by Mamre, on top of the Judean mountains, south of Jerusalem, among other places. And Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent towards Sodom. So he dwelt among the cities of plain. He pitched his tent toward Sodom, and then later he moved in. And that's a spiritual lesson, okay, there. But I'm not going to go there. But the cities of the plain is Ariz HaKirkar in Hebrew. The cities of the plain, Ariz HaKirkar, is this very unusual expression. It's only used for the cities of the plain. So it's a region or someplace that's out there where Lot dwelt. The five cities are actually named there in Genesis 14. Sodom, Gomorrah, Zoar, and we even told what it was formerly called. It was called Bela, and then Adma and Zeboiim. So there's five cities of the plain, and Zoar is the one that survives. And Zoar is key to this study, by the way. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities which grew upon the ground. So it's not just a judgment on the four of the five cities. It's actually judgment on the land. Okay. And he overthrew those cities. That's Genesis 19, 24 and 25, the operative discussion here of what destroyed the cities. Rained is the Hebrew word matar. And it means just atmospheric rain. It's like the rain from the flood. Brimstone is gofrit. That's mentioned here in this text. and it's a liquid sealant, probably, and that's from which we get our word fire and brimstone, right? Anyway, it's a flammable liquid that probably could burn, and be and it was used as a sealant. And he overthrew, that's the Hebrew word hafek, he overthrew those cities. Now that's a really good word, because I'll get back to that. It's used repeatedly. It's the operative verb to describe what happened to those cities. He overthrew the cities of the plain. Okay, what did Abraham see? And he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain, and behold, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as a smoke of a furnace. And there we have that word furnace, and that's the Hebrew word kibshon. Okay, and it's a forced air furnace. It's not a baking furnace. It's a kiln for, it's not for baking bread, it's for firing pottery. And so it's a special kind of smoke that is being called attention here. Did Abraham see the simultaneous collapse and ignition of the cities of the plain? Yeah, that's what it's, it seems to describe. Now, Peter describes this in the New Testament. I'll take you to 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 6. And having reduced to ashes the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, he condemned them with an overthrow, setting an example. Now, Peter's writing in Greek, and he reduces to ashes the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. He condemned them with an overthrow. And the word overthrow is this Hebrew or Greek expression that's a transliteration of the Hebrew hafek. Hafek means to flip over or overturn. He coins this new word called catastrophe. Okay, now you know the rest of that story, catastrophe, to turn under, and we have our word catastrophe. So the Hebrew word hafek, overthrow, was transliterated by Peter into Greek, and he comes up with this new word, turn under, catastrophe. So good, now we know the rest of that story. Sodom and Gomorrah became famous for what? The brazenness of human wickedness, the swiftness of God's judgment and deliverance and provision for the righteous. Sodom and Gomorrah, famous. Brazenness of human wickedness, swiftness of God's judgment, provision by God for the righteous. Why search for the cities of the plain? That's a great question. Well, it's vital for understanding of the geography of the book of Genesis. It's an important theme in both the Old and New Testaments. Jesus referred to Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, Peter referred to it. It's referred to by many of the Old Testament writers. It's believed to be central in to liberal theologians to this idea of a Sodom saga in Genesis. And basically the Sodom saga is we like to congratulate ourselves and pat ourselves on the back by reminding us about bad guys who did bad things. And so we tell a story about bad guys who got what was coming to them, and that makes us feel good. Maybe the Sodom saga. In other words, a legend, not a real event. And then could validate the historicity of Abraham and Lot in Genesis. And I have a story to tell on that sometime if you want to hear it in the question session. But if the Sodom and Gomorrah account is real history, then and that's before Abraham's time or at Abraham's time, 4000 BC, then the book of Genesis is the most unique historic document that we hold, because it describes life 4000 years ago and details and facts in an extraordinary way. And so if it validates the historicity of Abraham and Lot in Genesis, then Genesis is a tremendous book. And then, of course, there's extraordinary moral implications, especially for our time. Okay, well, where were the lost cities of Sodom and Gomorrah? Where is the region of lost cities? That's what you need to find. Okay, the plain of the Jordan, that's Genesis 13. The Vale of Siddim and the Sea of Salt, that's in Genesis 14. And then they're near these slime pits or Chemar pits or... Chemar is oil, and pit is the word well, so oil wells is in the Bible, believe it or not. Okay, Chemar pits, oil wells of the Vale of Siddim. they dug pits, probably mined tar or tar sand. The Vale of Siddim, okay, in Genesis 14. It's a four-hour walk from Sodom to Zoar, and I'll get to the reason for that in a minute. But Zoar has to be close to Sodom because Lot flees from Sodom, and he goes to Zoar. Before the sun had risen in the sky, he had entered into Zoar, and he started his journey in the morning. And Zoar is located in the southern boundary of the Promised Land in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 34, the southern boundary of the Promised Land that was given to Israel includes this city, Zoar. So Zoar was in existence at the time of Deuteronomy after the destruction in the other cities in the time of Moses. And then Zoar survived and flourished as an important city in the region of Moab. It's mentioned in the judgments in Isaiah 15. That city was to be judged, and also in the book of Jeremiah. So it's a big city, okay, and Zoar survived. Zoar means little, I think, in Hebrew, and it got to be big. And then Zoar is located by the ancient historians and the Madaba map. Now, ancient historians, Arabic historians, talk about Zoar because it's in Arabic literature. It's even in the Quran. Okay, and so Zoar is located by these historians, and they describe it even as a thriving metropolis or city, 10th century A.D. Okay, and Madaba map is a mosaic map in the city of Madaba in Jordan that I got to go look at and sleuth it out. I'll talk more about that. Okay, well, there's a satellite image of the Dead Sea, and you have the locations of the cities associated with the Dead Sea in the plain between mountains, okay, and it's within this giant rift-faulted basin. The Dead Sea-Jordan Rift is a giant plate boundary between the African plate and the Asian plate. Okay, the region of the cities is key to, key to locating the region of the cities of the plain is to find the surviving city of Zoar. And so Zoar is there amongst the cities of the plain, and that will locate the cities of the plain. And historical sources refer to Zoar as a city involved in commercial trade as recently as the 10th century A.D. And these Arabic historians refer to it. And the Madaba mosaic map records the location of Zoar in the 6th century A.D. So we know a lot about Zoar. It's a city where Lot survived the catastrophe. It's the southern boundary of the Promised Land. It was located in Moab, the region of Moab, by Isaiah and Jeremiah. It's Josephus, the Jewish historian, 1st century A.D., said it's south of the Dead Sea. Arabs report it's in the district of Asafia. And Madaba map identifies it as modern city of Safi. Okay, I got the opportunity to go to the Church of St. George in the city of Madaba in Jordan. And the Madaba map is extraordinary. And it's in the city under this, or in city of Madaba, where this church used to be. They called it the Church of St. George. The Madaba map is a tile map, something like 250,000 tiles, okay, and it's 9 meters long, something like over 30 feet long. Back 5th century A.D., they had a wonderful idea. They said, let's just make the floor of the church a mosaic map of the Holy Land. Boy, they had a really good way of teaching Bible back then. You'd come to church and you'd see the Bible geography right on the floor of your church. And this is what is the Madaba map. It's a series of tiles. Now, can I have that pointer again? I must have missed it, if Chris has that projection pointer. Anyway, you can see on this map, there we go. You can see on this map the Dead Sea. And every Bible map, north is to the left, east is up. See the Dead Sea right there? Yeah, the Dead Sea. You see the Jordan River going to Dead Sea. East is up, and there's the region of Moab, and then here is the Jerusalem and the Judean Mountains. So Jerusalem and the Judean mountains. And this is interesting because you can see in the Dead Sea boats floating there. And you can see fish going down the Jordan River toward the Dead Sea and fish going up out of the Dead Sea, but no fish in the Dead Sea. It's very interesting. And then the southwest corner of that map, I'm sorry that the image doesn't project very well, but right there in the southeast corner of the Dead Sea, in that box is what I'm interested in. I'll show you this. Okay, here's what it says. It says in Greek, Toyota, and that's not a motor car. It means to the honor of A-G-I-O-S, Agios, to the honor of Agios L. And then the tiles are chipped away, and so it's to the honor of Saint L. And it shows here a church. See, it has a red roof. On the bottom of a map, churches have red roofs. Okay, and so it's a church on the side of a mountain, okay, there next to this, a city with two churches with a wall and a gate and towers all around it, next to some date palms. You see that? And it says B-A-L-A, Bala, Balak, okay, and then it says Zoar in Greek. And so there's Zoar located southeast of the Dead Sea, and there's the sanctuary of Holy Lot, okay? And so on the basis of that, a man named Dinopolitos went searching for the sanctuary of Holy Lot, and he found it. There's southeast of Dead Sea, there's the city of Zoar, there's the sanctuary of Holy Lot, okay? We know it's Holy Lot because he found the name on the wall of the sanctuary. Okay, there's modern Safi, okay, the modern city of Safi, and on the side of the mountain is the sanctuary of Holy Lot, and a bleak image of the sanctuary of Holy Lot. You can see it's three chambers built into the side of a mountain. One over here opens into a cave. The other is kind of a little amphitheater. Doesn't open or go underground, and there's a third kind of portico over here. Then there were pillars up, and evidently a roof over this. So the collapsed roof and the pillars have been rebuilt or re-stacked, and that's the sanctuary of Holy Lot. And Dinopolitos found on the wall the sanctuary of Holy Lot. He found on the wall Lot, the name Lot. And Genesis 19:30 says what? After the catastrophe, what happened to Lot? Lot went up out of Zoar and he dwelt in the mountain. Now, Politos believes that the Byzantines revered this site as the cave where Lot fled to. Now, whether it's the cave that Lot fled to, there I am sitting there next to the cave. That was kind of a fun thing to think about, because inside of there there are early bronze 3 and 4 burials. And so we know archaeologically it's the time of a Lot. And so that was a burial cave of some type there. And so maybe that's where Lot fled to. Anyway, that's what the people that built this sanctuary believed. And Lot went up out of Zoar, and he dwelt in a mountain, right? And he dwelt in a cave. There it is. Amazing, isn't it? Okay, so that's obviously what the Byzantines thought about that site. There is inside the cave. And the rock here is spectacular. And geologically, I just went, I was amazed. I don't want to go into that, okay? But it's the early flood deposits, the earliest flood deposits sitting on the unconformity there. And that was a great thing. And then also the archaeology of the site is wonderful. Anyway, there's the cave, and that was excavated, and it seems like it's a good identity. Whether Lot fled actually to that cave or not, I'll let you make the decision. it's not completely obvious, but yeah, it's, there's the modern city of Safi down there, viewed from the Lot's cave, looking down at modern city of Safi, which is what? Zoar. That's built over the ruins of the city of Zoar. So where was Zoar? Zoar is next to the sanctuary of Holy Lot, okay, which is the modern city of Safi. So modern or ancient Hebrew Zoar is modern Arabic Safi. I could talk more about that. But anyway, possible sites of Lot's city of Zoar. Are we going to find Lot's city? It's a campsite. He bargained with the angels, remember that? And he fled to, he said, I'll go to Zoar because there are no wicked people there. And he made a bargain with the angels, said, okay, we'll spare that place. And so somehow Lot was protected here. We're looking for a campsite. Okay, archaeologically almost impossible to find. Anyway, so that became, it was Belot, became Zoar following the catastrophe. Where was Sodom? Okay, well, we have all kinds of interesting things. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, and they brought him and set him outside the city. The sun had risen upon the earth when Lot had entered into Zoar. So by he leaves at maybe 6 in the morning with his family, and he's no marathon runner. He's probably 60 years old or more. He makes this run walk from Sodom, the gate of Sodom, to Zoar. So Zoar is there. How far could he go? There's two range circles around it. Sodom should lie between radius 12 and 20 miles from Zoar. You see what I'm saying? And because he's no marathon runner, right? And we know where Zoar is, so it could be either in that northern square or that southern square. For a variety of reasons, especially for the boundary of the promised land, the northern square right in there is the place. See, it's got to be between the mountains, so it's got to be in the plain right there. Okay, well, Zoar is there, and there's the range circles, 12 and 20 miles. So it could be up in there, and it's a better place. Biggest early bronze 3 archaeological site, has the longest duration site. Evidently, Sodom was a primary city for a long time. There's a better southern boundary for Israel, okay, and it's easier seen from Mamre. Abraham's going to look down there and see it. And if it's farther north, it's easier to see. And it has an excellent sister city site called Wadi Namira. Okay, and there's modern Babidra, the site called Babidra by the Arabics. That could be the site of Sodom. Okay. Anyway, a man named Schwab said, hey, look along the wadis there, southeast of the Dead Sea. There are 5 wadis, 6 wadis, and those could be the sites of the cities. Like Sodom could be right here. Wadi Namira could be right here. That could be Zoar, of course, next to Safi. And there's Adma, and there's the Boyim down there, Wadi Kanazir, Wadi Faifa. So each of these wadis, Wadi Karak, Wadi Namira, Wadi Faifa, Wadi Kanazir could be the sites of these cities. And you build the cities where you have water, so that'd be a natural place to build. And then you could farm, and this whole area could be well irrigated, right? So that's what Lot saw. Anyway, the location of the cities of the plain, Sodom, Gomorrah, Adma, Zeboiim, with Zoar in the middle. This is just a guess on where they would be. Seems like it works. Looks like a duck, quacks like a duck. Could it be a duck? Okay, Lot sees the cities of the plain. He moves into Sodom. Mamre's up there on the mountain, the high country. Mamre up there, that's where Abraham dwells. Abraham knows that he has the whole promised land to himself. He lets Lot choose where he wants to go. Lot is kind of a cushy kind of guy. He knows the Lord, but he decides he wants to live down in the plain. He pitches his tent, and then he later moves into Sodom, right? And that's his big problem. Okay. Anyway, Genesis 13 gives us the context of that. Well, there's Sodom, there's Gomorrah, and there's Zoar. Wadi Karak and Bab Adra. Okay, here you see the site that could be modern Sodom. Okay, Bab Adra. It's a pile. It's about 500 feet long by maybe 300 feet wide, and it sits on the south side of Wadi Karak coming down there. The northern part of the wall is collapsed into that wadi, and there you see a road going along the south side. I like it. Okay, on the ground you can see it looking from the border fault, ancient city of Sodom, probably Bab Adra, right there on top of that hill. They always built on hills. It has a modern wadi right next to it and a cemetery on the south. So there's all kinds of reasons why the city would be there and be defended. The cemetery has huge numbers of burials, and it's early Bronze III, so it's the time of Abraham. And there's the border fault right here. The border fault is what makes the Dead Sea Jordan Rift Basin. And you can see it here. There's horizontal lake sediments on the surface of the site, which is an aquaclude that retards water transport. And so that's interesting. And there's a thick conglomerate bed underneath it, which is an aquifer. And so if all you have to do is penetrate that aquaclude into the aquifer, the conglomerate bed underneath the lake sediment, and you could have a spring or even a big well at that site. So there's some of the things to think about. There's the border fault. So that makes sense. Now you could build a big city there. Anyway, the ancient city of Sodom is Bab Adra right there. And the ancient spring could have been on top of that plateau. And there's the modern wadi with a modern spring there today, but it could have been up there 50 meters higher, 150 feet higher perhaps. And the shift of this aquifer could have happened along this fault. And so a lot of my thinking is that this big fault affected that site tremendously, the border fault zone. Here's the city, the wall, walled city. Right, here's the western wall of the city. Up there is the temple site. Here's the temple site. There I am looking at the temple, and you see that. What's interesting is there are lots of burn evidence all around here. This is a worship site, the high elevation in that mound. Here's the southern wall, symmetrically collapsed. And symmetrical collapse is something very unusual when you see it in archaeological sites. The wall has pancaked flat. And it's not that battering rams or invading armies knocked over the wall. It's spread out over a wide area. It just didn't so it's some type of catastrophic collapse. And so I look at that south wall and say, wow, that's a big pile that's been shaken. It could be an earthquake. It could be a collapsed debris. Okay, the gate of Sodom at the northeastern corner, the gate of that city was excavated, and there I am, and there's the mountains in the background. So I thought about that. Isn't that interesting? I'm sitting there in the wall, right? Now the two angels came to Sodom, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. Okay, escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed. And the Hebrew word is safi, swept away. And the safa, the Hebrew is safa, and the modern name of the city there is swept away, safi. Anyway, Genesis 19 describes that. I kind of like that. I say that's kind of neat. Okay, the collapsed structure, north side, it's collapsed into the wadi. Here's the there was a wall across here somewhere, and there's been huge amount of movement. The early Bronze spring was up on top there and make the city. The modern spring is down there. There's the border fault. Could there be 30 to 50 meters of vertical offset along the fault? And then there's a charnel house, a burial house that was found, collapsed debris. It looks like there was a fire on the roof. So the excavation in the cemetery provides evidence of a general burn outside the wall of the city. So Sodom, Gomorrah, Zoar, Wadi Namira. Now, next, take you to Wadi Namira right here. The Arabic name Namira, Arabic and Hebrew. N-M-R in Arabic, N-Mira. That's the way you'd say it in Arabic. Hebrew, mora, guttural sound. So you might see the modern translation of the Arabic name of Gomorrah right there in the site. Anyway, I like thinking about it, and I was involved with studying the site excavations of previous excavations at this site. And what's really neat is the site is very distinct, and the walls and the border faults. There's a splay fault and a border fault at this site, and it's uplifted. You see the people there on the site, people over there, right on top of the site. And looking in a little bit more detail, you see the people standing there. This is the south eastern tower. The southeastern tower is the most elevated part of the site. There's the south wall, the southwestern tower, and we're looking to the east from the middle of the site over to the southeastern tower. And the tower right there is what's left of it is amazing. The collapsed tower. And there's the collapsed house. I'll show you the collapsed tower first. At the base of the collapsed tower, this debris was found, and in there is pebbles and ash. And that square, I'll show you there, was excavated. And then the general square is the big excavation. Okay, take a look at this. There's the collapsed debris over the debris of the burn of the tower, and it's burned. There's a lot of ash in there. This is the excavation at the base of the tower. Two human skeletons were excavated. There's a human skeleton, and there's another human skeleton there. This was excavated back in the 70s. And head trauma. Rocks fell on these people. So it's general collapse. And then there's ash, burned wood debris all around. So the collapsed house is interesting. There's a pottery covered floor, beaten earth floor, and the ceiling of a house collapsed on top, trenched through this collapsed house. You can see it. There's the beaten earth floor. And over here is the next photograph. I'll show you what's there. You see the burned debris of the roof sitting on the pottery shards that were sitting on the which were broken as the roof collapsed onto the floor. And no stratigraphy underneath it. That's alluvial fan debris. And so this shows that this is a collapse and burn of a house. So I was fascinated by thinking about that. And then this city didn't have a stratigraphy. That house would just appear. So geology of Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom was built on ancient lake beds. Gomorrah was built on an active alluvial fan. Both sites were abruptly destroyed in the early Bronze III by collapse and ignition. Both sites were adjacent to enormous border faults that created the Dead Sea Rift. Both sites display vertical displacements, probably tens of meters. And both sites have severe mass wasting and erosion. And there's tar seeps associated with the border fault. Peter's description is that we reduced to ashes, right? He condemned them with an overthrow. And, of course, that's where we get overthrow, the Greek catastrophe. Peter translates it. Okay, let's go keep going here. The Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah, fire and brimstone out of heaven, and he overthrew those cities and the plain and all the inhabitants of the city which grew upon the ground. That's Genesis 19, 24 and 25. And, of course, the word rained, and then the word brimstone, matar, and gofrit are there, okay, and then overthrew. Hafek, Hebrew hafek. Well, what do you think about this? Brimstone is gofrit. It's some kind of pitch or flammable hot sealant, distillation of wood, asphalt, or sulfur. They probably processed asphalt next to that site, and they probably sold it to Egypt as a sealant because they used it for brick in Egyptian constructions. The term is connected with a type of resinous wood called gopher wood in Genesis 6:14. It's the asphalt processing and export was likely industry of the cities of the plain, and it's known for its suffocating odor of sulfur. And it's an image of God's vengeance on the wicked, burning stone and fire in the New Testament. What did Abraham see? And he looked toward Sodom and toward Gomorrah and all the land, the plain, and beheld. And lo, the smoke of the city, country went up as the smoke of a furnace. The Kibshon, the furnace. Abraham saw the simultaneous collapse and ignition of the cities. So Abraham's up there in Mamre, and he's looking down, and he's seeing these five cities, and four of them are on fire, and the whole country is being toasted. And so from something like a 25-degree angle of vision, if he's looking down there, that's quite a sight. 30 miles distance over a 30-degree angle of view, say, something like that, he sees smoke like a forced air furnace rising over the cities of the plain. What an awesome sight. Well, there's lots of petroleum in the border fault, and so I loved studying this. There's slime pits in the Valley of Siddim. There's tar seeps along the eastern border of the fault zone. There's been floating asphalt blocks observed in the Dead Sea after big earthquakes. The Dead Sea has been called the Sea of Asphaltus by Josephus during New Testament times. More than two dozen oil and gas wells have been drilled in the southern Dead Sea Basin. And distillation of our documentation of earthquake fires. Now, let me talk to you about earthquake fires and a little bit about border seep. This is the salt along the edge of the Dead Sea. The salt incrustations are along the sea. But in this one place I went, I saw the distillation of tar that oozed out along the border fault. So we know there's tar and hydrocarbons oozing out along the fault. It's there, the active oil seep. That recent salt incrustations at the shore of the Dead Sea are broken away by tar oozing from the rock along the border fault. Earthquake fires. I'm an expert at volcano lightning and earthquake fires and lightning, which is interesting. Owens Valley earthquake, immediately following the great shock, men whose veracity was beyond question saw sheets of flame on the rocky sides of the Inyo Mountains but a few miles distance. These flames observed in several places waved to and fro, apparently clear of the ground, like vast torches. They continued for only a few minutes. 1872, March 26, 2 o'clock in the morning, the earthquake occurred, one of the largest earthquakes in California history, recorded history. And it was fire shooting out of the ground, a distant fire seen by numerous observers. This is the newspaper report. Earthquake fires occur during earthquakes. Competent observers describe the flaming phenomena, scorched trees, explosive sounds, erupting sand and mud, floating tar, sulfurous smells, bubbling lakes. These observations demonstrate that gases and liquids erupt along faults during earthquakes are frequently combustible. Piezoelectricity. Let me tell you about earthquake electricity. Earthquake generates lightning and electricity. And you can take a quartz crystal, like I've shown here, and you can hit it with a hammer, and you can generate a voltage with a voltmeter. You can measure the voltage. Okay, pressure applied to a quartz crystal produces a measurable voltage. Or a voltage applied to a quartz crystal generates a vibration or a pressure. My watch, quartz watch, that's the principle. Piezoelectricity is used to tell time. A microphone is a phonograph needle. Those are modern examples, a digital wristwatch. Unfamiliar examples of piezoelectricity are earthquake lights and earthquake fires. Okay, earthquake lights. I have lots of reports. I don't want to bore you with all my earthquake lights. Normal lightning has been observed during earthquake. Balls, or what's called ball lightning, fireballs, have been observed to shoot out of the earth, fly through the sky, and fall back to earth. Sky flashes, aurora-like beams, looks like a bunch of fireflies standing over an area. And then St. Elmo's fire, when you have high objects standing up, St. Elmo's fire starts appearing on like trees and on fences and things like that. strange atmospheric lights have been created by piezoelectric effects. The earthquake in Kutch, India. At the moment of the shock, vast clouds of dust were seen to ascend from the summit of almost every hill and range of hills. Many gentlemen perceived smoke to ascend, and some instances fire was plainly seen bursting forth for a moment. A respectable native chieftain assured me that from a hill close to the one on which his fortress is situated, fire was seen to issue in considerable quantities. And then he goes on to talk about the ball that was vomited from the earth and fell back to the ground, where it divided into four pieces, and the fire suddenly disappeared. On examination of the hill the next day, the chieftain stated, it was found rent and shattered as if something within had sunk, and the spot where the fireball was supposed to have fallen bore marks of fire on scorched vegetation. So these are well-documented events, ball lightning, vomiting out of the ground and falling back to the earth. Earthquake lights in San Francisco. This occurred, a funnel-shaped mass, 4th Street in San Francisco, right after the earthquake, April 18, 1906. Suspended in the air, it was illuminated by scintillating lights like fireflies. And then in the western San Francisco area, blue flames were seen hovering over the bases of the foothills. And in San Jose, California, where my mom lives and where I grew up, there are people like Professor Larkin who describes this, the Alameda area in San Jose, California. Electrical display. The time of the shock, there was a blaze with fire, being of a beautiful rainbow color, but faint. And of course, there was no fire, but just an atmospheric display. Magma apparently exists underneath the Dead Sea, and the argument can be made from earthquake evidence that there is magma under the Dead Sea. And you'll see earthquake shadow zones, places where there are no earthquakes or very few earthquakes, about 10 kilometers down underneath the Dead Sea. And the largest mass apparently sits underneath the south end of the Dead Sea. Do you see how that's a position there? Now, what could that be? There's no earthquakes there, or very few earthquakes, so that could be a large mass of magma sitting down there, molten rock. And when you have magma near the surface, what happens? Things like Mount St. Helens, right? Okay, and especially if you have water in magma. So you've got everything you could possibly need. Small historic earthquakes beneath the Dead Sea are not uniformly spaced. Do earthquake shadow zones represent the hot ductile and high density magma at depth? They could. So imagine this. All those magma bodies have punched up there in the big magma body underneath the southern Dead Sea. So we have these potent agents of destruction, flammable gas or liquid, piezoelectricity, magma. Was there a supernatural agency as well? My thought is that gas was erupted on the fault. The wind was blowing to the east. The gas was heavy. It flooded the area over the cities of the plain. And then what happened? Some type of piezoelectric effect ignited the gas, and what? It burned. Zoar was on the western side of the fault, upwind, okay, in the modern Safi area, and so it was not flooded with this heavy gas and didn't burn. The cities of the plain, boy, it's a significant biblical topic. The cities are located in the region of Moab, southeast of the Dead Sea. Specific EB3 sites are the likely cities. Earthquake collapse, piezoelectric phenomena, and flammable matter ignition were the likely agents of destruction. I can kind of see that. And authentication of the details of the account of the judgment has important implications today. And more research on geology and archaeology of these sites need to be conducted in the future. And I'll end with a scripture. What was the sin of Sodom? What was the sin of Sodom? Pride, okay? hey, look, this is the iniquity of your sister Sodom. She and her daughter had pride. Ezekiel 16, right? Fullness of food, abundance of idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. And they were haughty, committed abominations before me. That's what God says the sin of Sodom was, Ezekiel 16. And it sounds like us today, right? We have pride, fullness of food, abundance of idleness. We don't strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. And we're haughty and commit abominations before the Lord. Okay, so that's the last scripture I'll end with. Deuteronomy 29. Kind of a prophecy. I look at this as a prophecy. The whole land thereof is brimstone and salt and burning, like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboiim. This is the prophecy about what God will do to Israel if they abandon and forsake his law. Like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboiim, which the Lord overthrew in his anger and his wrath, even all nations shall say, okay, after the judgment of Israel, after they disregard God's law, wherefore hath the Lord done this unto the land? What meaneth the heat of this great anger? And what's interesting is we're talking about this today, right? And so I'm asking you, what meaneth the heat of this great anger? And I might be fulfilling this prophecy right in front of your hearing, you know, so check that one off as fulfilled, perhaps. Deuteronomy 29. Okay, that's my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. And again, if you have any questions, comments you'd like to make, raise your hand and I'll get the microphone.
When you're talking about the cemeteries and stuff and you're saying it's early Bronze Three, what exactly does that mean? How do you use that dating?
Yeah, what do I mean by early Bronze Three? And that is a pottery and a cultural level that archaeologists have learned to recognize. And it's bronze. In other words, they didn't have iron. They didn't smelt iron. But it's recognized mostly by the styles of pottery and ceramic material. And that's what we think is the time of Abraham. It's about 2000 B.C., right in there. And that's right where the Bible puts Abraham. It's about 2000 B.C. So that's what early Bronze 3 or EB3 means to archaeologists. I work with a lot of archaeologists, and so we just talk that way. And but they had some very sophisticated lathes where they turned pots. There is a very interesting archaeology of that interval. And those are big cities, they're recognized. Now, early Bronze 3 was destroyed, and there was no rebuilding of the city of Babadra, that site that I think is Zoar, so it became abandoned. Early Bronze 4 is what we should see on top of it, and it isn't there. So imagine a whole city, you know, a big city with a wall going into, what, extinction. And then a small city, a campsite down there, modern Safi, becoming a giant Los Angeles, just rebuilt in EB4. So EB4 did not rebuild that site. Oh, wow, that's neat. Okay. Other questions? You want to know the trigger, right? Okay. It's fire and brimstone. That's what destroyed it. I give you my guess as to what it was. A spark was what would trigger that. And, of course, spark can be created by electrical phenomena associated with earthquakes. When Mount St. Helens erupted, okay, competent people, I talked to the people who were flying over the summit. Right as the earthquake occurred, the summit started to slide away. All of a sudden, the sky became fog, and what happened? Lightning. lightning right away, right after, and they describe it. And it was fearful. They thought the plane was going to be struck by lightning because it was all around them. And it wasn't the eruption that was bothering them anymore. It was the lightning around the plane. So that's an amazing thing. And charge separation occurs when magma moves, and especially when particles are dispersed through air. Evidently, that causes lightning. Dr. Vardaman can help us understand that maybe a little bit.
Steve, question.
Did you find the same pancake effect to the walls of Gomorrah as well then?
Yes, they're knocked down, and the northern part of that wall, well, you saw how it collapsed. It collapsed on people. Okay, now that's got to be catastrophic collapse, right? People don't just lay there and wait for the wall to fall onto them. That's obviously catastrophic collapse. And then I was looking at the charcoal in that horizon. That was just amazing. So that tower, that southeast tower at that Wadi Namira site fell catastrophically, and the wall is pancaked out, you know, like before. So that was probably the most interesting part of that excavation for me. Okay,
Steve, question.
Yes.
You baited us by mentioning that you had a story on the historicity of Adam and Abraham and Lot. I'm biting.
I baited. Okay, you're biting. Okay, it was probably 8 or 9 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. I took David Noel Friedman, the Judaic Studies professor at University of California, San Diego, to lunch. I know that professors have weaknesses, and that the weakness is they'll talk for free for food, right? So I took him to lunch, and boy, did he want to talk, okay? But his favorite subject was earthquakes, and so I started talking to him about Amos, the prophet Amos. And I asked him, who wrote the superscript of the book of Amos, you know, Amos 1:1, 2 years before the earthquake? I asked him that question, and he said, Isaiah. And when he said Isaiah, I said, which Isaiah? Because you've written about three Isaiahs written that existed in the post-exilic period that were redacted to make the present book of Isaiah. And there was no Isaiah. There were three Isaiahs. And which of those Isaiahs is the one that wrote the superscript of that book of Amos? And he said, there was only one Isaiah. We were fooling ourselves. And Isaiah was a pre-exilic prophet. And then I said, well, if Isaiah wrote the superscript of the book of Amos, and Amos cites liberally from the book of Deuteronomy, then the Torah has to be in existence. And you've written that the Torah was composed in the 5th century B.C. by a committee of redactors. And he said, boy, were we wrong. And then we hit it off. We had a wonderful time talking about Genesis being a historic document written by Moses, believe it or not, okay, and written about what? Abraham's time, and he believed in Abraham. So I was talking to him, the greatest Judaic scholar of the 20th century, and I asked him about Sodom and Gomorrah. And he says, I think I know where Sodom and Gomorrah are. And he said that, and I said, I think I do too. And where do you think it is? And so we agreed on where the places were. He had come to that general opinion, too. And so I asked him, what would be the greatest accomplishment of your life? David Noel Friedman said this to me, documenting the existence of Sodom and Gomorrah. He said that would be the greatest academic achievement of his career. And boy, when I heard him say that, obviously he believed that Genesis was a historic document. He had become extremely conservative in his understanding of Scripture. And then we had a wonderful time talking.
Steve?
Yes. Question.
So Genesis tells us that Mrs. Lot turned into a pillar of salt. Would you expect to find that pillar of salt?
Okay. Salt is very soluble substance, and there are some kind of salt pillars around there southeast of the Dead Sea. Maybe one of those is the pillar of salt. Okay. I don't know what to make of that. But yeah, she looked back, right? She was told not to, and she was told to flee. And so somehow her allegiance was with Sodom. She didn't want to go camping at Zoar, right? Okay. So women are kind of like that. They don't like camping experiences. I think Lot was kind of a cushy guy, right? And his wife was really a city dweller. And he probably wanted to move to Sodom because his wife wanted to go there. Well, I don't know what you tell me, but okay, question.
Why do you think that Abram got to look back, or Abraham got to look back at the cities burning when Lot's wife was not?
Okay, good question. I think he felt the earthquake. I think he felt the earthquake first. It's in the middle of the day. He's probably worshipped at his altar site, and he's probably wondering, how is it with Lot down there? All right, and then he feels this earthquake, and he looks down there and sees that, right? Sees this, the whole cities of the plain on fire, and that would be my take on it. Why does he get to see it? Because he's not fleeing, and that's the way God is. God will show Himself sovereign to somebody like Abram, right? Who was very was God's servant at that time. So, what do you think?